show. You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 76. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. This week's episode is with a guy who I've never met before, but who was always kind of in the same circle as me. Now, what am I talking about? Bradley Haig, who is no stranger to this podcast. He's been a guest twice, once as part of the Real Nerds with Ryan Frost, and then a second time I interviewed him when he was releasing Jean-Claude Van Damme's Damn Van. Now, Bradley is an auteur. He's a filmmaker. He's one of my favorite people. I say that in this episode, and I mean it. He's just got creativity coming out of him in ways that I can't even begin to fathom. He seems to have a ceaseless energy about him, just this indomitable spirit where he's always making something new, and it's a joy to behold. For instance, Jean-Claude Van Damme's Damn Van, this week's guest, did the sound design for that show. His name is Mike Henderson. And so I was introduced to Mike through Brad, and Brad, I love him, is a relentless promoter as well. And he said, hey, can you have Mike on the show in advance of the 48-hour film project screening that we're doing this year? And I said, no, I can't turn it around that fast, but I'll be happy to talk to him. So we got it set up. I talked to him last week. Mike is a dude, when I walked into his house and Plan 9 Studios, that's Mike's studio, runs it out of his home. He's got this unbelievable setup in his basement. Just, it rivals any professional studio I've ever seen. You should really lay eyes on it. Go to plan9studios.com and check out his equipment. That's in his basement. It's remarkable. But it's a dude, when I walked in, he immediately had like an MST3K poster, the movie, and we started talking about This Island Earth, which, I mean, if you're not a Mystery Science Theater fan, then it's one of those things where if you are, you immediately sort of connect with the person you're meeting for the first time. That's exactly how it was for Mike and I. You know, I asked him, I said, Plan 9 Studios, so is that like an obvious nod to Ed Wood? And he goes, well, obvious to the right people. So we were immediately kind of on that wavelength, and it comes across in this week's episode. It's a really good, like, hangout episode. We cover some cool ground, and we talk what it's like to be contractors and consultants, and we get a little bit philosophical about it. And, you know, we talk turkey about how he does what he does. It's sort of the mission of this podcast. It's exactly the type of thing I like to talk about. But more importantly, we just sort of connect, and we riff a little bit, and we talk about the decline of De Niro and how maybe the next Jack Nicholson movie will just be footage of him at a courtside Lakers game, you know, in the mold of sort of Adam Sandler movies, just getting paid to do whatever it is you were going to do anyway and go on vacation on the studio's nickel. And it's really kind of a fun change of pace. I mean, I would say last week I connected really well with Jake Brown and we had a great, fun, lively chat about a bunch of different things. Similar kind of vibe this week with Mike Henderson. So if you like that one, you like this one. Once again, we geek out over movies, we chat about music, we riff with each other, we have a lot of laughs. It's episode 76 of the podcast, and it's funny, the more I go along, the more it sort of trends this way. I don't know if that's intentional or not. I don't particularly care. I try and be very zen about it. Hope you enjoy it as well. If you do enjoy it, please find us on Facebook. We're at J-O-A-T Pod. Find us on Twitter, also at J-O-A-T Pod. Tell friends about it. Invite friends to like the page. Anything you can do to help spread the word about John of All Trades, I'd love you forever for it, which includes giving us a rating and a review, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your preferred medium is. Maybe you just like listening on the site. That's fine with me. It all comes to the site anyway, johnofalltrades.us. You can search John of All Trades on iTunes or Stitcher. And like I said, a rating and a review helps us move up, helps us get more exposure. And thank you very much for doing it. So let's get to this week's episode. It's an awesome, fun chat. New friend, guy named Mike Henderson. It's episode 76. He is the founder, the owner, the head honcho, the main dude. How many different ways can I say this? At Plan 9 Studios. That episode begins right now. So So when I drove up, I was disappointed that there were not giant cats outside, because as I was driving up, I go, oh, this is the block where they did Catastrophe. And there were a lot of effects in that movie. Was it weird doing it in your own home?
It wasn't weird so much, but I think my neighbors definitely thought it was weird.
Right. Were they watching you out there?
Yeah, running up and down the street. We got a couple weird looks. And, of course, we had to tape huge tarps over the windows because Bradley Haig,
yeah,
our director.
Oh, and Brad's been on here twice. Three times, if you count, when I did the interviews with the filmmakers at the 48 last year.
Oh, is that right?
So, yeah, Brad's no stranger to this podcast.
So there's no excuse to run out of things to talk about if Brad can do it.
That's right. That's 100% right.
But, yeah, I think what I was going to say is, yeah, he had us climbing on the roof, taping tarps over the windows because he would too much light, and you just do it. You just do it. I don't understand why. I just do it.
Do you guys have an HOA here? Were they upset?
No, they weren't. I was kind of expecting a letter from them about throwing the blood down on the street.
Right, outside. A strongly worded letter.
Yes, that's right. But how do you even approach a homeowner about that? I'd love to see that letter.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we'd like less blood in the gutters, please.
We need less fake blood in the gutter. You got your corn syrup is screwing up our system here.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember when the first year I did the 48, it was like 5 years ago, and I wanted access to be able to film in our little subdivision. We ended up not using it. But I sat through the most boring HOA meeting just so I could tell them what we were doing so I could get sign-off from them.
You actually went to one of those?
Yeah. Things. And it was so dull. And they go, oh, that's really cool. I can't wait to see your movie. And then we ended up filming at this bar like the whole time. And I go, yeah.
Yeah, their interest waned.
Yeah.
Very
much so. They were more interested in, you know, what we were paying for snow removal.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But so we're here at, well, your home, number one.
Right.
And number two, Plan 9 Studios. Mike That's Henderson, right. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Thanks. This is a blast so far.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Leave it open.
Yeah, don't make the value assessment just yet. But you showed me your studio, and it's an impressive studio. And we were talking, and you said, you know, you say I have a studio in my basement, and some people say, oh, you know, basement studio, that's cute, or, you know, whatever the reaction is. First question, Plan 9 Studios, an obvious nod to Ed Wood?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Obvious to the right people.
Right.
Right.
Do other people ask you what it means, and do you deflate a little bit when you have to tell them?
I do get a little annoyed. It's like, you're the wrong kind of people then.
Right. We're not going to connect as immediately as I'd hoped.
They ask what happened to Plan 1 through 8, and I just kind of shake my head.
And you go,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now and then you'll get the people that come in and just, they immediately know it, or they'll make a Glenn and Glenda reference, and it's just like, okay, this is going to be a good project.
Then. Right. Or they'll ask you, they'll go, so are we doing this entirely in stock footage? Or?
Yeah, that's right. And the answer is yes.
Yeah, the answer is always yes. But so the perception might be that, you know, you have a studio in your basement, but you go down there, man, and that rivals any professional studio I've ever been in. It's filled with all the technical gadgets. You gave me an approximate dollar value of what you invested here. And it's legit, man. Is it hard to overcome sort of that perception? Is that something you struggle against?
It was when I was recording a lot of bands. Because, yeah, you're competing against those Craigslister guys who do have the little Porta studio on the card table. And it's, right. It's a home studio. And there's a lot of posturing, too. A lot of people trying to inflate the worth of their studios. And you can kind of see through that. But, yeah, the competition's out there. It's stiff. But when I got into indie filmmaking, all of a sudden I was like this big fish in this little pond. There just aren't a whole lot of audio guys.
Really?
Yeah. Well, studio owners.
Okay.
Yeah, production audio guys. There's a lot of great, great audio guys in Denver. But for post sound, yeah, I run the playground is so much fun.
Why do you think there aren't that many studios in terms of indie filmmaking?
That's a good question in that it probably goes back to filmmaking is such a visual medium.
Right.
And we all think visually. all of us think visually, and it's really hard to shift that and realize. And most of the indie clients I get, sound is the afterthought. They got through their shoot, they edited their movie, and they're looking at it and they just feel something's wrong with it. Mm. And then they start looking for a guy like me.
That's interesting, because I would argue that, I mean, outside of maybe lighting, having poor lighting will just tip people off. This is a cheap film, right? That this is not necessarily of the highest quality. But I would argue that audio is probably equally as important, where it needs to sound good. And I was talking to a couple of weeks ago, a guy who edits film trailers together. And what he mentioned was, if a shot is lit not all that well, if you're in sort of a forest where it's twilight and you can't see the characters that well, but you can hear them really well, you'll stay locked in on that scene for a long time. And you'll go, oh, I can hear them. There's intrigue. But if it's a perfectly lit shot, if it's a beautiful shot and you can't hear them that well, you go, to hell with this. I'm not even watching this.
It is obvious when it's bad, but.
Would you say that the focus on the visual is it at all misplaced? Should filmmakers be paying more heed to audio?
Oh God, you hear that complaint all the time from audio guys. What was it? I think it was like 2001 or 2002. Mike Myers gotten so much deep shit. I can swear on this podcast.
It's the internet, man.
And because he was presenting the best sound mixing and the best sound design Oscar, and he said something to the effect of, now it's here's the award that's going to rock the industry or something like that. And audio guys just kind of lost their shit. But I was on the other side of the camp in terms of, so much sound for film is unconscious. Huh. I mean, think of the last bad movie you saw where you hated it, I'll just say it. Terminator, right? Genesis.
Okay.
There's that shot where Arnold rolls off the hood and kind of rolls onto the highway, and it is so paper ragdoll looking. The visual effects were terrible. Everyone noticed.
Yeah, yeah.
But with sound, you can get away with so much.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It exists so much on an unconscious level. Like, last time you hated a movie,
yeah,
or thought it was poorly done, you walked out, was because of the sound.
I suppose not. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I'd never really thought of it that way. And it's funny, because I've sort of gotten up my own ass about sound lately, because I talked to an action sports filmmaker who comes out of the audio. His background's audio too.
Yeah.
And the editing of any film or of any sort of project that you're doing is probably going to have one or two layers visually, but how many layers audio wise? You know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of if you're looking at your timelines, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a lot more audio layers than there are visual. Is that correct?
Yeah, it depends. Some heavy special effects movies can have hundreds of visual effects layers.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, I understand
in terms of
what
like
your point is.
If you're doing like indie filmmaking, though, you know, the visual timeline is probably not going to be as deep as the audio one, because you've got music, dialogue, ambient. What
yeah,
else, right?
Yeah, that's right. I guess that kind of covers it. But within each of those, there are tons of layers. I think we were talking catastrophe. I think,
right,
if I remember correctly, I had about 160, 170 tracks going on throughout that whole thing.
160?
Yeah. So just there were foot movements. There were squishing noises when the blood hits. We did some ADR. That's a dialogue replacement for a couple lines that just didn't work.
Okay.
During the production, and then there's all the music, and it just adds up.
Yeah, it's funny, because especially with something like the 48, I feel like audio can be a real differentiator for filmmakers who might not necessarily have their feet entirely under them, because some of those movies, you went to the screenings, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and some of them, it's like, oh, you're basically just capturing all the audio from the camera mic, right?
That's right.
And you go, like, you may as well film this with a Sony Handycam, right?
I give them a lot of slack for 48 hour, because it's 48 hours.
Yeah.
And so when it sounded like shit, and a lot of them sounded like shit.
Very much so.
It's okay. But but I'm like, well, yeah, what more can you do in 48 hours? There were guys rendering their their submission in the car on the way or sitting at the bar. And when that happens, it's like, well, yeah, there's no room for audio post. I get it.
I recognize that. But if you're looking to level up, I mean, all I'm trying to do here is embolden what you do.
Yeah.
and you're shutting me down at every turn.
You know, Bradley, I was so lucky. Brad, I think it was 5 a.m. that Sunday morning. He said that the picture's in sync lock, and once the edits are in there, and I know the timing's not going to change, he just let me go at it, and
nice.
It was so much fun, So yeah, he got it.
Good. So what is that process like for you? So Brad's got all the shots arranged exactly as he wants them, right?
Yeah.
And then you come in and like take me through sort of what you do.
Okay.
To see it to completion.
So specifically with that project, they edited the film up here. It was in the house. This was our headquarters. They edited it with the on-camera audio. And then we had taken logs through the whole thing and matched it with my audio that I was recording throughout the whole. So higher quality audio.
Right.
So I lined up all the takes they wanted, the dialogue. Cleaned up the dialogue. You got to get the lip movements out of there and the smacks that I'm filling your podcast with right now.
It's okay. We put it through the click and pop editor.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Good. And then you have your whole piece, but with really disjunct and choppy lines. I mean, you'll hear a line, then there's dead silence. So there's nothing in between. So then you start kind of smoothing that over. You put in ambiences, room tone, and you get that smoothed out. So you got a good solid dialogue track through the whole thing. And then the fun begins. As much as I love audio dialogue editing, I'm like, oh, fuck that. But it's tedious stuff. Yeah, it really is.
Well, believe me, I go through here and I take out ums and uhs and I'm staring at audio blobs. And it's funny. If I look at a timeline, I can go, there's going to be an right there.
You can see it. Yeah. You get your rhythm.
Yeah. And you start seeing it. I mean, I have to listen to the whole show. You know, when it comes out, I go, I don't know if I'm going to listen to this again. But when you're going through the edit process, you've heard people say things so many times.
Uh-huh.
And you can tell people's rhythm. It's like, okay, do they have individual ums or do they do ums that lead into words? And you go, oh, if they do, then that's going to suck.
Screwed. Yep, you're screwed.
You're like, I just have to leave it. Because otherwise, it sounds like you're doing a dub on like an old Japanese movie or something.
Do you do the whole Samuel L. Jackson and say one more time, motherfucker?
Yeah. Ain't no country I ever heard of. They speak English and Okay, so you go through that.
Okay, yeah, dialogue is done.
Good.
At that point, then you can go two directions with Catastrophe. I was doing the music and the sound effects. So normally on another picture, someone else is scoring it.
Sure.
And they're doing it independently as you. So you have to coordinate with that person and say, okay, are we going to, who's going to take this scene? We've got this scene coming up, huge action scene or big climax of the film. Let's make that a scoring thing or let's make that a sound design thing. So you're not stomping over each other. But in the case of Catastrophe, I was doing both. So then came the fun of watching it all the way through. And I watch it with the sound totally off.
Wow.
And I look to where my eyes pull me. Where does the director want my attention? What is the kind of feel that he wants? And I say he in Bradley's case. And then you kind of you get the feel of the piece.
Yeah.
You kind of notice as an audience member what you want to be able to hear. So you start, it's called spotting. You start deciding what you're going to cue.
It's almost like storyboarding after the fact. It sounds like to me.
It kind of is. Yeah. Yeah. I never really thought about it like that, but you're right. You're planning it and, you're storyboarding after the movie's been shot, which now in retrospect sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah. But you're giving the film its sort of feel. You go, okay, here's what I want to enhance. Here's what I want to downplay. Here are the moments that need an audio touch one way or the other.
And in most cases, I'm brought films way late in the production. But when you're watching it, you're thinking, okay, this would have been a great opportunity for instead of having your actors say the line, we could have used some foreshadowing.
Yeah.
We could have planned these shots or even decisions, audio decisions that affect the editing.
Yeah. Do you need dialogue to exposit this line? Could you have Could you have done exposition visually beforehand?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Or an actor or a director that makes their actor say, "What was that?" Don't say "What was that?" just allow me to put in the fucking sound. Everyone in the audience will say, "What was that?"
Yeah, go
in their head.
Huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you turn into a cat all of a sudden. Just
yeah, that's right. With the laser pointer.
Yeah, totally.
And that's something everyone, not just audio guys or directors, they fall into that thinking they have to have their A game on, that everything, the success of this scene all relies on their performance. The composer will feel that way. The editor will feel that way. The actors will feel that way. And the sound designers will feel that way. So the best people I work with know when to back off and say, all right, at this moment, this scene is really about the acting and the dialogue. Everyone else, get the fuck out of the room.
Right.
Yeah. So okay. So then with Catastrophe, that was the fun part, was doing the sound effects. So sure.
Do you do Foley here too?
We did. I sent my poor wife to do the Foley for when the blood hit the main actor at the end of the piece. I had her go molest a few grapefruit. Sure, if you ever tell your wife, please go molest grapefruit, that she's pretty clear what you're asking. Right.
Exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
The main actor, was that your daughter?
It was my daughter.
And you threw goo all over her face, right?
It was chocolate syrup.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I looked at it and say that's obviously chocolate syrup. I could have thinned it out a little bit, but it was black and white. We knew it was going to be black and white, and so we thought, yeah, the darker and thicker, the better.
Yeah, because you know it's fresh blood. So
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Help me through this.
Yeah, so it should be extremely dark because it's straight out of the lion tamer's body, right?
Totally. Yeah, that's right. Oh, she got it in her eyes.
Oh God,
she still complains to this day.
You're never going to hear the end of it.
Oh, it was worth it though. I got to throw a pitcher of chocolate syrup in my daughter's face. It was incredibly satisfying. I can't recommend it more.
Okay.
To fathers out there.
So hey, if you're looking for an endorsement on the 48-hour film project, an opportunity to throw things in your children's faces.
Yeah, that's right. What more do you want?
Perfect. That's what else do you need?
So yeah, you asked about Foley.
Yeah.
My wife did a lot of the Foley sounds. We also captured some animal sounds when she pulls the curtains away and seeing the big cat. That's actually the same cat. It was one of its meows.
Oh, nice.
That I slowed down and did some bass synthesis on it.
Wow.
To really make it growl, and it worked.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a huge cat in the film. And it was the cat that was on the couch when I walked in, right?
Yeah, the cats here did star in the picture.
Okay. Not an intimidating cat in person.
Did it scare the shit out of you?
Oh, yeah.
Of
course. in the most comic way possible. Because I have two cats at home who might, in their current state, might rival the cats in that film because they're enormous. They're like part bobcat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Footstools?
Yeah. And one of them is just fat. But we think he was one of the cats who was like, you know, 36 cats found in 2-bedroom apartment. Because he's like, so he was rescued. And when we got him, Kristen brought him home. And she's like, the cat's in the bathroom. I have to keep him separate for, you know, a couple of days, whatever, while they get introduced to each other. And he had the kennel cough too. So
oh right, yeah.
And like every cat that comes out of the rescue, and I come in and he's emaciated and he's just so skinny and he's sick. So he looks up at me. He's got these giant satellite dish ears. He's all skin and bone, and he looks up at me and goes, because he's all congested. And I'm like, hi, and he's all like, and I go, good God, what did you buy? Like, what is this cat? Is this some sort of eel?
Like, in my head, I'm thinking, I should have come over and recorded that.
That would have been good to have. Just keep that one in the holster. But
no, so you bulked him up afterwards, huh? Was this just as a survival reward?
Well, you
made it.
I think he got his new life, and he's like, all right, well, time to live like Garfield.
Yeah, I got a lot of catching up to do.
He's like, bring me another fucking pan of lasagna. He's like, I'm good. I'm living the high life. So what does it take to see the film to completion at that point? When are you done? When do you look at it and go, okay, I've got it and it sounds great?
Oh, God. It's so cliche to say, but the deadline really drives it.
Okay.
You're like, okay, I can sit here and keep doing this
yeah.
for several weeks more. There's always something to tweak, but there did come a point with Catastrophe where I thought I can be proud yeah. about showing this to people.
Yeah. Well, it's like, what does Lorne Michaels say about Saturday Night Live? He's like, the show doesn't go on because it's ready. The show goes on because it's 11:30.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. And some of that is the exhilaration of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Honestly.
Racing against deadline.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was. And I think all of us after that 48 hour, we said, that was fantastic. We're never going to do it again. But next summer when we're ready to go, call me.
That was fun. It was great. I loved working with you guys. Thank Christ it's over.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And now let's not do it again until they start calling us.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So how long have you, when was Plan 9 Studios established?
About 2003 or 2004.
Okay, wow. So you got more than a decade in the game here.
Yeah, yeah.
All on your own?
For the most part. Nice. Yeah, it's always kind of just been me. But for the first, I'd say the first decade, I was really focused on music. And then I got sucked into one of my music clients was starring and producing a horror film called Killer Inc.
Nice.
Had Peter Mayhew in it, Mr. Chewbacca.
Nice.
From Star Wars. And they could not get the film finished. They had a ton of editors drop out, just kind of back away.
Wow.
Take the footage and run, that kind of thing. And they couldn't get it done. And they brought it to me. And I said, yeah, I'll take a look at it. And I just got sucked in.
Yeah.
And
what year was that?
That was 2011.
Okay, nice.
It was one of those you slap yourselves for not thinking of it earlier because I've always loved movies.
Yeah.
I mean, I named my studio after the greatest movie ever made.
Is that up near the top for you? I mean, do you like it ironically? Do you like it sincerely?
I totally like it in the Schadenfreude kind of way of liking to watch a car accident.
Yeah.
But
did you see the Tim Burton Ed Wood movie?
It was fantastic.
I love that movie.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp once again playing a character, but
yeah, no, he crushed it in that movie.
He did.
Like he gave it such humanity instead of these like series of cartoons that he seems to be playing now.
Uh-huh.
Where, you know, with like dead birds on his head and like crazy makeup and you're going, "What are you?"
It took me a second. I was like, "Dead birds. Lone Ranger." Yep.
Yeah, where he's doing, I don't know, kind of an ugly caricature, I think.
Yeah, he has gotten a little goofy. A lot of actors late in their career just turn into caricatures of themselves.
De Niro.
Yeah. Nicholson.
Yeah.
Ford. Come on, Harrison.
Yeah.
Stop growling. I love you. Stop growling.
The thing about Nicholson that's so weird is I just rewatched The Departed recently.
Oh, God. I fucking love that movie.
That movie's great, but Nicholson is like the eighth best person in it.
Oh, easily.
Like, yeah. Like, by far. I mean, he's behind even like Alec Baldwin in that movie, who's spectacular.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, Alec Baldwin, you can't help but laugh when he's like, "World needs plenty of bartenders," and then just fires Marky Mark right there, and you go, "This guy is killer."
Yeah,
and then you watch Nicholson, and you go, "What the fuck is he doing?"
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of actors just get to play themselves.
Not a bad gig if you can get it.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And when you hire Nicholson, you kind of hire him for the Nicholson bit.
Yeah, to do his Nicholson thing. I would not be surprised if he suddenly turns into Adam Sandler and the next movie takes place like courtside at the Laker game.
That's funny. Didn't they do Anger Management together?
Yeah.
Weren't they in a picture together?
Yeah, I did not care for that movie.
I did not make it through that movie.
Good for you. you made the right choice by bailing early.
Which I totally acknowledge. There's hypocrisy there. If I love Ed Wood films, you can't sit through an Adam Sandler. Come on.
Yeah.
Just make it through, Mike. But I could not do that one.
No, and I saw, what is that one called? Grown Ups. And I go, there's not even like any jokes in here. Like it.
Yeah,
they're clearly on vacation and they're getting paid for it, but they couldn't even like crack wise on each other. Like, wouldn't they do that if they're just hanging out? If you believe these guys are friends, wouldn't they be at least busting balls?
Just a touch? Bantering.
Yeah.
So is it a facet though of us just not being in that target market? I think the target market for that one was 13-year-old.
Maybe, but still, there's no jokes. I mean, you compare that against something like Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, that's right.
Older people hated that movie when I was younger, but I watched it now and I go, look at Lee Trevino in that movie. Lee Trevino is killer. Just shaking his head at everything that happens. they couldn't have had a writer there, like where, you know, in Grown Ups, someone shows up and just sort of casually disapproves Lee Trevino style. Shit, it could have been Lee Trevino. How funny would that have been?
So that's an interesting thing, because I think, is it the whole Hollywood yes man thing where you're so excited to be on an Adam Sandler pick that you just don't have the guts?
Because it's going to make a shitload of money too.
Yeah. And you think, do I just grit my teeth through this because I need the work, mm-hmm. and I don't tell someone that this is a terrible picture we're making?
Yeah. Do you care? Do you go, I can put this on my resume. I worked with these guys. I worked on this film. Maybe that'll help me get work that's more artistically fulfilling.
That's a good question. When a film fails, it's never my fault. As the sound designer, I don't get blamed.
That's true.
It's directors, actors, and writers. They get blamed. And now and then the producers, if the director can properly deflect.
Right. Yeah. And if they can go all like super pissy about it. I think about Richard Donner with Superman 2.
Superman 2. Same thing happened with Fantastic Four just a few months ago.
Yeah. Is it impossible to make a good Fantastic Four movie?
Apparently not.
Apparently not. What do you mean?
In terms of it's not. Oh, it is impossible. No one can do it.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you're saying. It's this is what the third iteration,
something like that. And
including
you watch
Roger Corman,
which at this point I think is standing.
It might be the best.
It's the leader in the clubhouse. Which is wild.
With the Nerf thing.
Yeah.
God, that was so good.
That's so awesome. Well, it's better than like Michael Chiklis just standing there glowering, and whoever played the thing this time. I can't even remember.
Oh, shit. Oh, I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't
know. It's lost it. Life's an open book test. If you're listening to this, Google it. We're not going to answer it for you.
They're doing it right now.
So if you're that interested in that crappy Fantastic Four movie from earlier this year. But whatever. So, yeah, I mean, we were talking about Ed Wood. We were talking about Plan 9. And so that was a turning point for you. Did you start doing more movies at that point? Do you do less music now?
I do considerably less music. And I've found that was about the time when I discovered the Emerging Filmmakers Project, which is at the Bug Theater on the third Thursday of every month, where they just get together and they screen. A lot of filmmakers submit their shorts, between 5 and 7 minutes, and everyone gets together and screens it, and it fills the house.
Yeah.
And I think back at those times where working on a CD or an album with a band, and you spend anywhere from 1 to 10 months working on an album, and everyone's on their A game. Everyone busts their ass. You have the release party. You market the shit out of it. And the drummer's mom is there, and maybe a half a dozen other people. And it just breaks your heart.
Yeah.
It just breaks your heart that this amount of talent just isn't heard. And then you do a crappy little fun movie like Catastrophe.
Right.
And it screens a 48-hour, and you look behind you in that movie seat, and the Mayan is packed.
Yeah, there's like hundreds of people there.
And you're like, oh my God. And they're laughing at all the right places. The satisfaction is so amazing with short films. So yeah, to give you the long answer is film has just been so much more rewarding.
That's
to
awesome.
Me. I enjoy it thoroughly.
And it sounds like, I mean, when you started out, how did you get yourself established? Because going out on your own is always challenging. First of all, what were you doing before that? And secondly, how did you start to build your book of business?
When I was doing primarily music, I'd get the most calls based on word of mouth.
Okay.
You go on Craigslist or Backpage or something like that, and you'll get just kind of, not to be negative to musicians, but kind of bottom of the barrel, the people that just want to trade services.
Yeah. What, like, we'll help you, like, build your resume, and produce our album for free, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, and that exists in the film industry.
Sure.
Too.
That exists literally everywhere.
Yeah.
I do PR, and there are people who are like, well, you know, especially when you're starting out, they're like, You know, can you write this press release for us? Like, you know, we'll give you recommendations.
Exposure. Yeah.
And you go, exposure, really? Like, I may as well take off my fucking clothes on a casting couch.
It's like, exactly
this is,
right.
This is ridiculous. It's like, no, I do. I'm a professional. I do work. You fucking pay me for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are a lot of directors locally that do believe in paying all their crew.
Yeah.
And it shows. It really shows because everyone is in it. Everyone has something invested in it and no one phones it in.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So who you're getting to me right now is Sneakers.
Okay. Sneakers is paying love.
Yeah. And she was one of our extras in Catastrophe.
And she goes, "Ooh, I smell boy cats on you." She's like, thanks for, thanks for bringing some fresh boys into the house. So anytime I come home smelling of girl cats, they go, "Oh, promise of a different life." And
just rub it on.
just let me smell your hand for a while. Let me just rub my face on your hand for a second. One thing I've always been dying to ask someone who produces music, like who works with bands. Actually, first, no, that's going to be foreshadowing. First question, what types of musicians did you work with? All kinds?
In terms of genre or just...
Yeah,
in
terms of style, genre.
Oh, God. I did blues, jazz, choral, rock, metal. Denver's got a thriving metal scene. Everyone's in a hardcore or thrash band.
Yes.
Yeah, and everyone's singer sounds like Cookie Monster.
Okay, that your segue is absolutely perfect. Because... I think about, and this always kills me, if I need to laugh or to smile, I think about a band like Cannibal Corpse. Or are you familiar with Cannibal
No.
Corpse?
No.
Okay, Cannibal Corpse is, you saw Ace Ventura, right?
Of course, yeah.
You remember the guy up there doing the Cookie Monster vocals before?
Uh-huh.
That's Cannibal Corpse.
Oh, okay.
And
they're a big break.
No, they're pretty hardcore, like... Pretty established.
Are they?
Underground metal band. They have song titles with charming titles like Fucked With A Knife. All sorts of like the most grotesque, hideous.
Intentionally provocative.
Yeah, disturbing imagery you could ever come up with.
Yeah.
The thing that kills me is the idea that those guys have to go into a studio and they have to say to their sound engineer, when I say Fucked With A Knife... I think the low end is fading out a little bit. Can we
make that more silky?
Yeah. I'm getting too much of a pop from the snare drum. Or like, and they have to engineer it. So ridiculous. Something like that's the most insane thing you've ever thought of. Like, this is a song about boiling Jesus in oil. Or, you know, just anything that you can think of, they go, okay, but we want to make this sound as good as it can.
You would be shocked at how much meticulous artists those guys can be. They craft that. And these are characters they play.
Yeah. But the thing that kills me is the juxtaposition of the most extreme, crazy, insane people, like Gwar. Right?
Uh-huh.
You look at Gwar and you go, you got to put all that shit on every day.
and take it off.
Yeah.
And grumble with all the makeup remover at the end of the night.
And it's like, oh, I'm breaking out again from all this goddamn makeup. But you think, you juxtapose that with the mundanity of what it takes to edit together an album.
Uh-huh.
It never fails to make me laugh. Can you describe what that process is actually like?
Yeah, actually, I freaking love that. Those moments, going back to film.
Yeah.
Where you're doing an action movie, something with some action, and you're using none of the recording from on set.
Right.
And you get that person in here that's supposed to be doing the action behind a $3,000 microphone in this confined studio, watching themselves on the monitor. And I'm saying, okay, give me some grunts. Give me some, ugh. You know, that's my favorite one is thinking of Schwarzenegger doing those in his movies. Cause it's all ADR. It's all replaced later.
Seriously.
Thinking of him grunting in front of a microphone, in only grunts that Arnie can do.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I love those moments.
Yeah. Yours was really good.
Everyone's got an Arnie.
Oh yeah.
What's the line? Everyone can imitate Arnold, but Arnold cannot imitate us. Can he do an American accent? That would blow me away.
That would be something.
Yeah.
Speaking of the grunts, I think of him like choking to death in Total Recall.
That's right.
Like when his eyes are all bugged up.
In your head, just picture him in the studio doing those sounds.
Like with a bagel next to him.
Yeah. Little more water, please. I'm getting dry.
Yeah. Can you turn up the humidity in here?
I love those moments. Yeah.
Dude, that's amazing. And so you've watched people do that?
Oh, yeah. one of Brad's other pictures, Jean-Claude.
JCVDDV.
Yeah, that's right. I did the design for that film.
Nice.
And there's a moment, I'm totally spoiling it, when the reporter gets her throat sliced. So here in the studio, I had Eileen gargling water and spitting into a towel.
Oh, wow.
And it's those moments I'm like, my 15-year-old self in the past would totally fucking love me.
You're like, this is my job.
I love this. More, please.
Dude, that's amazing. So you've worked with the Cookie Monster metal band.
Yes.
And when you're listening to it, and the guy is growling into the mic, and you read the lyric sheet later and you go, seriously? Like, that didn't sound anything like that. How do you, as an engineer, sort of keep this grounded in reality? And presumably you can tell the difference, but how does that even work?
I don't know. I think it's not grounding it in reality. You accept you embrace the theater of it all.
Okay.
And you love it. You're like, okay, so we're going to make this sound distorted and grungy. We're going to take what he did in the studio and we're going to just up the ante and take it even further and see how far I can take this before the client says, you know, I know we said, I'm going to put a knife in your pussy, but this is a little too over the top, Mike.
Right.
I kind of go for those moments.
Okay. So you almost push them in the opposite direction. So they have to bring it back themselves. Like they have to reel it back in a little bit.
Yeah. And within reason, of course.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a lot of cheesy overdone
sure
stuff of, the worst thing you want is an audio producer who calls attention to themselves with their,
right,
with their effects or their editing.
Right.
So yeah, I don't want to be on the front cover of your album. This is your work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
so
of course.
I'm just here to up the theatricalness of it.
Are you ever in there though with something like that and you hear it and you go, we are really making a piece of shit here?
Oh yeah.
I mean, you've got
to say it.
Working when I worked for a PR firm, there were some clients that were just beyond help where it's like, they don't fucking get it.
So it's going back to Adam Sandler.
Kind of. Yeah, you're right.
What do
we
you
answered
do?
Our own question.
We did. So what do? Do you just kind of say they're the boss? I'm the hired client.
Yeah. And when they ask for input, I'm going to give them my honest input.
Yes.
But I make recommendations. Yes. They make decisions.
And that's a really good way to put it, kind of realizing that this is their project. Kind of in the end, whatever they say goes, but you get your opinion in there.
Yeah, it's important to...
In a gentle way.
Well, and to give them the best counsel that you can. You can say, you hired me as a professional. In my professional opinion, you should do this or you should not do this.
That's right.
And at the end of the day, they go, okay, hopefully they go, I hear you, but this is the way we're going to do it. I'm the client. I have to own this. I'm making this decision. I own it.
Yeah. And those conversations happen with almost every client, not just the ones where you kind of realize you're on a sinking ship.
Right.
Even when some of those bands, you'll counsel them in terms of guitar tones. You'll say, you know, this whole Les Paul into a Marshall, that's been done a lot. So if you want to do something new, where do we experiment? What should we try and do? And you give them some options. And those are some of the fun moments.
Yeah, no, those are great. And hopefully you help them contextualize their art or their intent in a different way that they haven't thought of.
Yeah, that's right. Because a lot of them know the concept of what they want, something different, but they don't know the options or how to actually vocalize it.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of the best part about consulting is when you help someone realize potential, and not to be too cheesy about this, not to be turn into fucking Tony Robbins, but to go, you know, it's like, have you thought of it this way? And they go, holy shit, I haven't thought of it that way. And you watch them grow and become like better than they even thought they could be.
Yeah, that's right. And you invite experimentation in there. And that's when it, because a lot of guys in bands, they come in, they don't have a whole lot of studio experience. So they're a little apprehensive anyway, and they're nervous and their thoughts are always on their budget.
Sure.
Of course. And so it's that balance, right? Of how do we encourage experimentation without me saying, okay, that night we experimented, Here's a bill for $500.
Right.
We didn't get anything out of it. But, you know, and that's a tough conversation to have, too. So,
yeah. Something I'm curious about professionally, because I have my own consulting business. Doing what you do, do you prefer to bill, like, by the project? Do you bill by the hour? How does that – what's your preferred method of doing that?
It's different. For bands, I usually go by the hour for all time that you're in the studio. And then there's a flat rate for editing and mixing because I do a lot of that work alone late at night too. So and it goes faster with me alone instead of having – and it's boring for the client to be there and listen to the same syllable be looped thousands of times because I'm just sculpting it, right?
Right.
And so that stuff will be flat rate. And then films, I always do flat rate, just per minute of finished film. And that tends to work a lot easier for filmmakers.
Okay. Interesting.
It ends up being lucrative for me for longer films, but someone comes in with a 3-minute piece. I'm like, oh, well, shit. I just earned $200 on this, on this short. God damn it.
Yeah. Hey, righteous.
Yeah, that's right.
my suburban home, you know, that's going to cover a very small portion of my mortgage this month.
Yeah, kind of. Honey, you're working this month, right?
Right. You got it going this month, right? Sort of a weird question. Did you watch the show Parenthood?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Of course, love the movie, the Ron Howard film.
The movie is superlative. The show, I loved. The show was good. It was kind of weepy. It was funny because it didn't have like... A lot of dramas on TV will have super high stakes. This one is just like a family getting along, which was kind of refreshing in a really weird way.
That actually sounds fantastic, where it's not...
It's not like life or death all the time.
Yeah, and up the ante. There's not a terrorist with a ticking bomb every freaking episode.
Yeah, well, it's like the show Dexter. It's like, how many serial killers are there in Miami?
I thought that.
Like, there are so many people committing mass murder here. You know, if this is a reflection of society, that's way more terrifying than we want it to be. The reason I asked about Parenthood was because in the later seasons, well, actually throughout the whole run, Crosby is a sound engineer, the guy played by Dax Shepard.
Okay.
And so he works with musicians, you know, he does the whole audio engineer thing.
Jesse from Full House Syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. Except
no, I'm relating to this.
Okay. He doesn't have his own band though.
Oh,
yeah, which, you know, whatever. You can't have everything. Towards the end, in the like last two seasons, he and his brother buy a recording studio in, I think, Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. At some point, they not only have the studio where they have talent come in, and you'll see like the band Dawes is on an episode, which is really fun.
Yeah.
At some point, they pivot, and they also start a recording label. And I'm like, you guys are a studio and a record label now in 2014.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a good one. I like your style here. So I just wanted to, I was hoping you'd seen the show so you could weigh in on it. But I thought it was ridiculous not being in the industry. And I thought, if I know someone in the industry, I can't wait to find out how absurd this really is.
Yeah. Can we think of another way to lose money faster than a record label and a studio?
They should found a newspaper.
Yeah, that's right.
That'd be good. Let's start doing like print journalism, like long form print journalism.
That's brilliant.
Yeah,
yeah.
We'll be millionaires in this weird liberal utopia we live in this show. Just so fun. So, having worked with as many bands as you have, if someone walks in and say, "We're this kind of band," what was the one you looked forward to most? Like, we're this style. And you go, all right, this is going to be a fun project to work on.
Not so much style, because style—it's like going to a different restaurant. Every restaurant, every kind of food is good in its own way.
Oh, that's a good point.
The way I look for really good clients is one, a client who has a plan after they leave the studio.
Okay.
So they don't go with the whole field of dreams. We're going to make this, and then everyone's just going to flock to us thing. The people that actually have a plan, those are the ones I get excited about, because I think this client has their heart in it.
Sure, yeah.
And they're really thinking this through.
And they're going to go hustle it. Like they're going to work it, and they're going to make it happen. That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I love seeing that happen. And the other thing that I really love seeing in clients is clients that make me, that I get a little scared about the project. In terms of how the hell am I going to do this? Oh my God. And getting back to the thing earlier, it's exhilarating. And then it goes into the depression. Once you actually start doing it, you're like, oh my God, I should have never said yes to this.
Yeah. I'm going
to
die doing this.
Yeah, that's right. How the hell am I going to get this done and by their deadline? And then when you make it, it's like, holy crap, everyone come and see this, or everyone come and hear this. Those are the ones I get really excited about.
That, and you're absolutely right. For one of my clients, for my business, I just did live television for the first time. Like,
did that scare the holy shit out of you?
Yeah, I was spiked with adrenaline. And it took me forever to come down off of that because I got done. You're on live TV, and Grant, we're in a small media market where I was doing it.
Uh-huh.
And I knew what I was talking about, and I was dialed in, and I'd done media all day. But when you go live, that's like next level shit. And I'd never done it before. So I go, whoa, okay. But I was nervous to do it. I got done doing it. I felt amazing. And it's almost like, all right, let's try that again.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I know what you're talking about. I worked at PBS in my college years. And
nice.
Yeah, the offline stuff was never nerve wracking. It was during those, the begathons.
Yeah.
When it was all live. That it was just absolute pandemonium,
yeah,
and chaos and exhilarating.
Yeah,
you just love it.
It's fun. And what the crazy thing is, though, and I mean, what we're talking about here, we're both independent contractors.
Uh-huh.
It's a roller coaster. There are highs and there
the
are
feast
lows.
And famine thing.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And that's really not for everyone.
So, do you get that feeling of, did you have to work through being able to say no to a project because of that feeling? It's like, oh my God, if I don't say no to this, the phone's not going to ring for 6 weeks.
Right. Yeah. I haven't had to say no yet, but I can imagine what that's like. It happened to me when I got out of college and I interviewed for this one job, and it was the first time I ever got offered a job.
Yeah.
And they weren't paying me anything. And then I found out what the job actually was, and I go, oh, this sucks. And I had to turn it down.
Yep.
I was so panic stricken.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. You freak out.
My wife made me learn how to say no.
Yeah.
Because she's like, okay, I think 5-6 projects going on at once is way too much. I'd like to see you sometimes. And so you develop that.
Right.
Maybe I should say no to some of these. And then the inevitable thing happens where the phone doesn't ring and you're like, oh shit, what have I done?
You're like, oh no. I'm going to be standing in front of my house with a cup in my hand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Or even worse, you see the piece after they went somewhere else. You say no.
Yeah.
They go do it by someone else. And then you see it and it's really good.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh God damn.
Yeah. That's pretty intense, man.
Yeah. Those are those ego things. And you know, as an artist, and you're an artist too. Everyone's an artist with their passion. You have those moments of jealousy, depression, fear.
I don't know about you, but I'm naturally sort of predisposed towards anxiety. But now that I'm working as a consultant, I have it like it's in the back of my head all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Consulting feeds that.
Yeah.
It totally does.
Where you go, okay, I'm good for this month, or I'm good for this couple of weeks, or I'm good for even these couple of months. But you're looking ahead all the time going, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
What's next?
What's next?
And when I was writing, my friend and I started this humor website where we posted every day. I'd finish an article and I'd have like 30 seconds of relief. I go, okay, that one's up. That one's good. And then I'd go, okay, shit, what am I going to write next?
Now what's next?
Yeah. Do you get that? Is that?
Oh, constantly.
All the time?
Constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It becomes like the new state. But the thing about it is, when I was in corporate, I became so complacent and so lazy and just so like almost intellectually flabby to where I'm like, okay, what am I going to do next? Well, probably the same shit again today.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That I did yesterday. But now I'm like, okay, what am I going to go after tomorrow?
Yeah. Oh, it's totally self-induced. I mean, we know this anxiety is. If you ever try and take some time off? I'm just not going to do something just for a week.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right. And in my head, I'm like, okay, I could be soldering cables. I could be picking up downstairs. I could be creating more templates. I could be actually going out capturing reverb.
Yeah. I could be touching base with past clients.
Yep. I got to be networking.
Yeah.
I got to be networking.
I got to talk to someone tomorrow. Who is it? I don't care. Like, yeah, no, I've tried to have downtime, and the nice thing is I'm not naturally wired towards a lot of downtime because I'm always thinking about creating something else. Like when I don't have anything to do client wise, I'm like, okay, well now it's time to pitch podcast guests.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't make money doing this. But it's like, okay, I got to keep the machine going.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of, well, is podcasting kind of a lost leader for you?
I wouldn't call it a leader necessarily.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, it's one of those things that I've been doing it now for a year and a half, and it's really starting to pick up momentum in a nice. Really cool way. And I didn't necessarily expect it to. I did it because I liked it, and you prepare yourself for success in whatever you do. Like you go in going, okay, maybe I can scale this up, but if I don't, I like doing it and I'm just going to keep doing it.
That's right. No, you can't stop. You can't not do it.
Exactly. And you hear that from stand-ups all the time too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, every artist.
Yeah. So do you, in addition to doing audio, do you ever film your own stuff? Like, do you get on that side at all?
Oh God, I'm horrible at it.
Okay.
When Brad, I keep bringing him up because I just worked with him most recently.
Yeah.
And Eileen Augusta, too. We're working on her feature Trauma. When they're setting up a shot, I'm just that dork poking my head over their shoulders, just kind of, yo, what are you doing? What are you doing? Granted, I'm looking to where I can actually position a microphone, but sure. Still, I'm in awe of the stuff they're able to do.
Yeah.
It's, and just set up. I don't think that way.
Yeah.
I just don't.
No, I don't think that way either. I think about... I mean, where my bread is buttered is thinking about how best to say things. So I'm like, oh, if you, even when I hear people arguing, I'm like, oh, you should have couched it this way. And I'm like, had you done that, you wouldn't have offended the other person. Like, you still would have made the same point, but you would have gotten them on your side a little easier, and we can come together easier rather than being contentious. And that kind of thing I think about. But I mean, we're all wired a particular way. I visually composing something, terrible at. Graphic design would be really useful for me in my line of work. Suck at it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm terrible at
it. It's so disappointing to see me draw something.
Yeah, because do you do the same thing I do, where you picture it in your head and you go, okay, I know exactly what I want this to look like.
Yeah, that's right.
And you start drawing it and it's like...
Fuck you, hand!
Yeah.
And why?
You're basically drawing the visual equivalent of fucking tuba music. Just like... Burr, 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 and you're like, oh, come on! How can I be this bad at this?
I know. It's horrible. I couldn't do better if I drew with my elbows.
I may try that next. just attach some crayons and just, me Waikikawa. That'd be good. But
abstract.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it'll be like, you know when they hand an elephant a paintbrush at the zoo?
Yeah, that's right.
And it paints and everyone's like, oh, look how good that is. It's like,
fucking elephants. It's like, such low standards. They can impress anyone.
Yeah, it's like, that painting is dog shit, elephant.
Totally.
Like, can you draw me something that actually looks like something else?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So, please, give me a break.
My daughter did better than that in fourth grade.
Yeah, 100%. Fucking entitled fucking elephants. Unreal. So what are you working on now, man?
Right now we're neck deep in Eileen Augusta's Trauma feature. She let me read the script a couple months ago, and I kind of just begged to be on the production.
Really?
Because it was so good. It's a thriller about a woman who's gets in an accident, and then her life just emotionally falls apart.
Wow.
During her rehab, and weird things are happening around her, and her family members seem like they're hiding something from her. And it's just unraveling it. And the suspense of the whole thing was amazing. Just reading the script. So I said, all right, I'm in. And we're about halfway shooting it.
Nice.
Right now, all through Colorado. And it'll probably come out next fall. We're aiming at.
Nice.
So yeah, I usually don't go on set with because it may not seem like it, but I'm a little introverted. So it's like, I just want to work in my studio alone.
You know,
it's not a hint. You can stay as long as you want.
When I talk to the trailer editor, he goes, I don't know of any editor that I've ever met who wouldn't be happy just like sitting in their edit bay.
It's true.
For several hours.
Yeah.
And I mean, in my job, I have to be part extroverted. But I think I'm more disposed towards introverted too. So like when I started asking people if I could interview them, that was a huge thing because it's kind of a weird imposition. And especially like I did, I think 7 or 8 interviews before I'd even aired one. So asking people to do something that you can't show them an example of yet, you go, okay, this is a real leap of faith for you now. Whereas now, you know, I have some people of prominence and, you know, I can go, okay, this person was on the show. They didn't die. This person, you know,
like, they still have a career.
But there are times where I'm like, okay, thank God. All I have to do today is sit down, edit this show, like put it together, write the blog post. Uh-huh. Like I can just sit alone and get in my zone. I think a lot of artists are like that. I don't want to cast too wide a net, but the ones I've talked to, you included, have all said the same thing. Like the time when you actually get to focus on your talent or on your craft, whatever it is, that's like some of the best time you ever get.
It is. Filmmaking is such a team sport too.
Yeah.
It's really, it may be a bad match for me is what I'm saying. No.
But so you said
interesting
you
career choice.
Yeah, exactly. You said you kind of battled a little anxiety too. I can't imagine the leap of faith it takes just to pick up the phone. And the whole thing earlier with my studio, I'm like, I have a basement studio. I have to qualify that to everyone.
Right.
You have a podcast. I bet you have to qualify that to everyone. No, but it's actually a legitimate podcast.
Well, dude, there are people who like, I read this stat recently that 30% of Americans, like either, I think it was either, no, it's not regularly, like 30% of Americans have listened to a podcast.
Yeah, I'd probably buy that stat. Yeah.
So, but that means like 2/3 of the people, 2 out of 3 people that you've ever met probably have never listened to a podcast and many don't even know what it is. So like, especially with some of my older guests, I'll go to them and I'll be like, would you like to be on my podcast? They go, yeah. What is that?
What the hell is that?
I go, it's like an online radio show. It's, you know, we'll do an interview. And they go, why do you want to talk to me? And I go, God, here we go. And at the beginning, it was sort of taxing. But now it's like, okay, I get it. Some people are not going to get this.
But you get your speech down, right? Your elevator speech. You know how to sell it now.
Yeah, it takes time, as I'm sure the same is true of you.
Yeah.
And once you have like a client list that you can show people, I think that's big too. Did that help you?
It did. The record industry is all about credits.
Yeah.
And the film industry to a certain extent too. So yeah, you go to a lot of these recording studios, websites around town and they put every single name of every client they've ever had on there just to make it look bigger. And it's what we do.
Yeah.
It's dick sizing.
A certain amount of that I think is good. There are times where it's over the top and to me it's off-putting. Like I work in communications, public relations, and there was this firm that we used and we went and met with them back when I was in corporate and we met with this firm and they do great work. Like they did exceptional work for us and they were a joy to work with. But I went to their office and they had like every media clip they'd ever had, every award they'd ever won, just like on display in their office. And I'm like, this is fucking garish.
What did it come off as narcissistic?
It was naked salesmanship to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where you walk in and it's like, look at the work that we've done. Look at how important we are. Look at this great acclaim that we've received. And you go, yeah, dude, I fucking get it. Like I met you and I know what you guys are capable of. I don't need you. Like I've already said yes.
Yeah.
I don't need you to keep selling.
You already
selling.
Sold me. Like, so what, do you think people who do that have no self-awareness or how they come across? They must not, right?
I don't know. I mean, it was clearly an intentional brand proposition for them. Maybe they get people in there and maybe that's part of their initial pitch where someone comes in, doesn't know anything about them. And that's sort of an immediate marker of it gives them some comfort and some credibility to where their potential client goes, okay, well, look, they have this cover of Time magazine or whatever it is. And it's like, that could be good for me and my business. I don't know. That's not necessarily how I sell, but.
Yeah. And me neither. I've never been good at that because every time I would just talk about my studio, it would come off as scripted,
right.
Trying too hard. So I just kind of quit trying.
Yeah.
It never worked for me.
Yeah. No, me neither. What are you going to do? So, okay. One last question.
Yeah.
If you were to get sort of a dream client or a dream project, what would that be? Would it be a film? Would it be an artist? Would it be, you know, a band? What would be the thing that you'd go, holy crap, like that would be one of the ultimate things that I could ever work on?
Oh, God, I've got a bucket list of them.
Nice. All right, well, lay it on me.
Yeah, I want to do a sci-fi film
okay.
at some point, just because a lot of the indie stuff you get in Denver are dramas, people talking, and it's low budget stuff.
Sure.
And I'm not diminishing that they're still good, but from a sound perspective, I'm like, hey,
you're like kind of not a lot of play, like not a huge playground here.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. So some of those, you do movies with time travel or dream sequences in it. And that's just, like you said, a huge playground for audio. I love that stuff. I'm waiting. At some point, I want to do an old radio drama.
Oh, nice.
Because so much of that stuff calls upon all your creativity to sell sounds.
Yeah.
Let's see if we could do it real time somehow.
Wow.
But I can't write. I can't write worse shit. So I got to wait for something to come to me.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's an invitation to anyone listening. Anyone working on an old-timey radio
drama. Old-time radio drama. Let's think of something. Let's do this.
That'd be good. That sounds like something Brad would be into, too.
God, it does, doesn't it?
But Brad, I mean, Brad's he's one of my favorite people. That guy is just always working on something creative.
And you see it in his eyes.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk a whole lot, but his eyes, you can just see it in the back of his head. He's always working something out. And
yeah.
And when it comes out, it's like, oh my God, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, you're a crazy man. I think it helps that he doesn't really drink that much. I like drinking.
Yeah, I'm okay with drinking.
He doesn't really drink that much. And I, you know,
now I'm kind of bothered by that. he and I are going to have to talk.
Yeah, we're going to have to get him to drink some more. Just to put a nice button on this, if you could work with like any director, who do you think it would be?
Oh man, boy, I'd have to say the Coen brothers.
Solid choice.
They got a sound designer, the only guy they work with, Skip. but those guys understand that they build sound design into the script and into the shots. They give a ton of elbow room to work something in.
Wow.
They make sound work for them. It's not something that you just hand it off later. And there have been so many times I'll just, quote unquote, watch the movies, but I'll shut the TV off and just listen.
Huh.
And if someday.
Wow.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, that would be some. What's your favorite Coen Brothers movie? Do you have one?
Oh, Fargo.
That's mine too.
Yeah. Hands down. I think I laugh at parts you're not supposed to laugh at.
I do that all the time. Fargo is like the blackest of black comedy. It's so good.
It is.
Yeah. That movie's working on levels, more levels than most people got levels.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I feel like every time I watch it, I peel away something else. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we're past an hour now. All of my interviews, I think I've been too enamored of my guests lately because I've been going over an hour, and I always wanted this show to be about an hour, but now they're sort of creeping past the hour mark. But I mean, shit, we were having fun talking Cannibal Corpse, talking movies. So now's the part in the show where if people wanted to find you and wanted to get in touch with Plan 9 Studios, how do they do that?
Lots of ways. I've got a website, plan9studios.com. I'm on Twitter at Plan 9 Studios and, of course, Facebook. I love doing this art, so if you just want to sit down and chat about what you're doing, that's so much fun.
Well, Mike, this was a pleasure, and I'm so glad that Brad hooked us up, and continued success to you, man.
Yeah, appreciate this. This was a blast. Thanks.
That wraps up episode 76 of the John of All Trades podcast. Thank you, Mike Henderson, for sitting down with me and telling me all about what you do. The life of an audio engineer sounds interesting. Whether you are, you know, helping put together a death metal band for their new record or cutting together an indie film, man, you're doing great work. Keep it up. Plan9studios.com. You can find everything about them linked on the John of All Trades blog. Go to johnofalltrades.us. That's J-O-N johnofalltrades.us. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications, Denver-based communications consulting. Check us out on the web, deftcom.us. And this show is brought to you by 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. Online marketing, web advertising, online community building. And they will do it probably less expensively than you're already doing it. Getting to that one consumer who needs to see your message, they will find them and they will do it brilliantly, cost effectively, and might I say with a little bit of panache. So come back here next week. We announce new episodes on Facebook, Twitter, and the website on Monday. They're teased out. Got a couple coming up. We're going to change pace a little bit, so stay tuned for that. And they're released on Wednesdays on the John of All Trades homepage on iTunes and on Stitcher. So we'll see you Monday, and until then, say goodnight, Gracie.